money is the only thing you're after, you never have enough of it. Never. Oh, if I make $100,000, I'll be all right. Now they need two. And when you get two, my goodness gracious, I got to take care of these other things. I got to hire her. Now I need three. And that goes on. And I say, no, that doesn't work. Anyway, I went stone broke. What do you mean broke, Tom? When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you could shake me. I didn't even jingle. Boom. It was broke. I used to live in a neighborhood. My neighbors were guys like Jim Palmer and Brooks Robinson. I lived in that kind of a neighborhood. My last known address to which I could get no mail was the last bridge that you cross over before you go into Fort McHenry. I was living under the bridge. And any of you who are contemplating future bridge dwelling, you can consult me right after this, and I'll give you some etiquette tips on bridge dwelling. You know, that time I lived under there. It was during the winter time too. So when a guy comes to me and says, "Oh, Tom, I can't get sober. I have no place to live," I really don't have any empathy for him, because I had no place to live, and I didn't look for no damn handout. I lived under the bridge, see? And I got sober. And there were some other guys under there with me, and they're sober too. And some got dead, and that's okay. That's how it is. See, we all got the results of what we had sown. Very, very simple. All right, so I went broke. Let's see. The company I helped found in February 1950 became pretty well to do. That's how I made a ton of money. On the way up, I was like a shark. I didn't deal with individuals. I still had a conscience. But I deal with companies and corporations, that's all. I was a shark, and I was a loan shark, too. I didn't, if loaning money, I mean L-O-N-E, loan shark. And I got careless. I became arrogant. See? So the best way I can describe it, on the way up, I was a shark, and on the way down, I was bait. That's what happened. Wound up in a great big old room. Down the end of that room, like those big doors down, there was a great big person standing silhouetted by the light behind it. That person got closer. It was a woman person, a big woman person, big woman person. As she drew nigh to me, I called her Mr. Nurse. "What's your problem, Buster?" "Buster? Does she know who she's talking to?" And I told Mr. Nurse I used to be a big shot. Told her I was a intelligent fellow, won an academic scholarship at Johns Hopkins University before I was 17, and all that stuff. And Mr. Nurse said she was impressed, but not a whole lot. And I told her my problem. My problem was there's no novel my size to door. And Mr. Nurse went on to explain to me this was a major hospital and that I was nuts and I had to keep locked up away from the rest of the patients, you know. Now, they skipped the child within and all the other intermediary steps. He just got to the point, "You're nuts." I think that's what they mean, you know. It was ego smashing, at least. I would say, you know, "You're nuts." And she was bigger than me, and she had all the keys, and it didn't seem like the subject was open for discussion. So that's what that was all about. Right? And that's just outside stuff. It's emotional, yeah. It certainly is unstable, yeah. But it's not soul scarring. I want to touch briefly on soul scarring issues. I don't have issues. Important people have issues. You know, I'm not that important anymore. I just have some stuff that happens, you know. You've had issues, that's okay. I think you better sprinkle a little Preparation H on them, though. It may help. Anyway. I look at some of the people around me, and I remember the promises I made to those whose only serious flaw in living was they were close to me and they loved me, and they trusted me beyond a reasonable series or events or beyond any reasonable length of time. We were long past incrimination, arguments, things of that type. I would just look in their blue eyes and see them mist over. And the sound was deafening, and not a word was said. And the sound was this: "How could you?" And I didn't know how I could. I didn't know. And the knife was already plunged in my heart. And it gave such a violent twist, I was stunned in a silence. I was also paralyzed into inaction. And in total desperation, I made a plea. Old Frank Lynch used to say that dying men don't pray, they plead. And I made a plea to a God I did not trust and a promise. And I broke that promise to the God I didn't trust. The promise I broke to God is the measure of my shame. And the promise I broke to those who loved me is the size of my guilt. So when I got to you guys, I was ready. I was emotionally a mess. I was divorced, fired, broke, nuts, crushed by guilt, shredded by shame, laying on the sidewalk of life, and I rolled off into the gutter. In that condition, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come here because I thought it wasn't a good idea. When you're living under a bridge, you have no pressing social engagements. Nobody delivers you mail. You're not waiting for a check to come to a place where they don't deliver mail, see? You have none of that going on. Your most domestic skill at that time is to sleep on the top ledge of this two-deck bridge because it's drier there when it rains, and it's drier there than when it doesn't rain, too, because some alcoholics on the upper deck have careless plumbing problems, so it's good that you stay sort of like top shelf when you live under a two-deck bridge. It's good in instinctual training you get from bars, you know, top shelf, you know. That's where you go. In that condition, I got here. I stood by the door. I'd never been to AA. I'm a first nighter. I have a second night, but I used it before I got here like I used everything else. Had there been one other thing to use, I would have used it. And I was totally hopeless. What hopeless means to me is that every idea that I tried to stop drinking failed. That means I had no ideas that would work. When you're totally stripped of any idea that'll work, that's hopeless. There is no hope. I can't do it, and there's no promise that I ever will be able to. That's the kind of condition I was in. I was all wrong for the world, and I was just right for Alcoholics Anonymous. Here I am. Some guy standing up here, you know. Yeah, I'm sober 5 years. Life sucks. I'm hanging in there. My wife is a bitch. My boss is a jerk. And I'm the only good driver in Northern Virginia. And if you want what I have, I'm standing by the door. I'm 3 days out of the nut house. I don't want what that bum has. But I gotta come here 5 years to be a professional bitcher? Whoa! That doesn't look sort of hopeful either. You know? Rainey was talking about, you know, towards the end of my drinking, we're searchers. Man, I put 4 years in a Roman Catholic seminary studying to be a priest, okay? We'd look everywhere. I never met an alcoholic who wasn't a searcher. Well, one of the guys became a physician. He's my favorite. He died. He told me I was, well, anyway, it's another thing. I was just pauper. Jack Sullivan became a physician. He was my doctor, and I went to see him about 6 months before I came to AA. And this big guy, he was about 6'4", 275 pounds. He's a big, strong guy, and his eyes misted it over like a little girl's eyes. And he says to me, he loved me. He says, Tom, you're going to die soon. That's all I know about soon. And that's what he told me. And his eyes misted it up, you know. And I thought to myself, it hurts Jack to tell me this. The least I could do is look concerned. And I thought, how do you look concerned? I had to get instructions on a guy telling me I want to die on how I look concerned, because I wanted to do it for his sake, not mine. For as you know, an alcoholic of my type, when somebody says you're going to die soon, there's no threat in that, is there? It's a relief, ain't it? That's really what it is. At least the hurting's going to stop. I won't have to wake up tomorrow to be gray. Did you ever wake up and it was gray and you didn't know whether it was dusk or dawn? But you sort of hoped it was dusk because all the promises you had made for that day, you could postpone them some more. Yeah, I did that too. I'm older than you. I beat you to it. Yeah, remember that? Yeah. It's still there. It's still there. We're not there, but it's still there. That's all I got here. Got a sponsor right away. Well, he got me. I didn't have enough sense to get a sponsor. I'd never been to AA. He said, I'm your sponsor. You don't have sense not to get one. You know? He was right. Randy, you'll love this. This is what he said to me, you know. He says, now, there's only rule between you and me is one thing. What's that? He says, the rule between you and me is I'd rather step on your toes than stand on your grave. And I intuitively knew what he meant. This was not going to be a popularity contest. I knew that. He says, that's what it's going to be. And then he said to me, we are going to do the steps. He didn't say, you there, go study. I told him I was going to join an in-depth study group. I was going to impress my sponsor, you see. And I have not yet impressed him. He's been my sponsor without interruption for almost 25 years. And I have not yet. Doesn't mean I stopped trying, but I just never done it, you know. So he doesn't seem to be impressed with me. And I'm sort of more in agreement with him, too, the longer I'm with you. And so we did the steps. Now, the best way to express emotional recovery, emotional balance, is the big book says extremely in a succinct, informed manner, the best pathway to emotional sobriety is spiritual well-being. Oh, there's other pathways. It doesn't say the only. You can study the child within. I studied the child within, and we had two drunks, me and the child within. My sponsor said I may have been contributing to the delinquency of a minor. But if you like to take that route, it's a possible route. You know what I mean? It may be. You may want to understand why you became an alcoholic, like I did. A lot of us have that compulsion. Why did I become an alcoholic? I pray that you get a guy like Wally. He finally said to me, Tom, because that's my name, and I always know when he says Tom, he's talking to the right guy. Make it real simple. See? He says, Tom, if you insist that you have to know why you became an alcoholic, I'm going to tell you. Thank you, Wally. And he says, your sainted Irish grandmother was fixing crab soup in her kitchen on South Charles Street in Baltimore one Friday afternoon, and she had the wrong shoes on. And for that reason, you became an alcoholic. And then he said to me, now that you know, do you think you could drink successfully? I says, no, Wally. He says, why all the bother? Why all the bother? It's like getting cut with a buzzsaw worrying about what tooth cuts you. Get the bleeding to stop, you damn fool. You bleed to death. And say, boy, yeah, he bled to death, but boy, he was smart. Yeah, right. When you pick up a drink, Tom, do you know when you're going to stop? No, Wally, I don't know when I'm going to stop. Didn't you tell me you stopped a few times, Tom? Yeah, well, you remember that, huh? He says, yeah, I'm sober. I listen to people. I can hear now. Oh, that's right, Wally. Told me that. Well, yeah, I stopped a few times, Wally.
What happened?
Well, I got drunk, Wally. I'm here.
He says, "Well, it looks to me that when you pick up a drink, you're powerless over stopping."
Well, if you want to put it that way, Wally.
I'm the sponsor. Yeah, I want to put it that way. And I said the most spiritual, I could say the Lord's Prayer in five languages. And I said to Wally the most spiritual words I ever said.
Okay, Wally.
Get in the car, Tom.
Okay, Wally.
Read the big book, Tom, 2 pages every day. Now, don't go 10 days and read 20 pages. How did he know what I was thinking?
Okay, Wally. That's what I did.
Spiritual words. They're the acts of surrender. Aren't we accepting help from another human being? That's surrender, ain't it? That's what it's about. It's not getting your head cut off. Accepting help from another human being. So he says to me, Tom, it looks like when you started, you're powerless over stopping. And it looks like to me that when you stopped, you're powerless over starting. So it doesn't make any difference where you're starting or stopping. You are in a powerless condition. That is saying. Starting and stopping are variables. Constant is powerless. You're powerless. Is that it? You're a smart man, Tom.
Okay, boy.
He says, what is the solution for a man in a powerless condition? And I tried to bull crap because I didn't know. He didn't let me linger too long and suffer. And he says, how about getting some power? Do you think that might be an answer for a man in a powerless condition?
Oh, yeah, well, that sounds like a good answer.
And I said, yeah. And the second step says that. Came to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. Do you believe that that power has worked for me?
Oh, yeah, Wally, you've been sober 16 years now. I've worked for you.
Do you think that power will work for me? I really didn't think so, but yes sounded like a good answer. So I lied and said, yeah, Wally, it's okay. I'll do it. He said, now you have done the first two steps. You're in a powerless condition, and you need a power greater than you. You can't think your way into recovery. Can't do it. You must act your way into recovery.
Well, how can I take actions unless I understand them?
That's the purpose of a sponsor, not to tell you how to take actions unless you understand them. The purpose of the sponsor is to walk next to you, and the sponsor will take the actions, and you imitate the sponsor. It's that simple. When you do it that way, there's absolutely nothing you have to know, but there's a lot of things you've got to do. The appropriate answer seemed to be,
okay, Wally.
So that's what I did.
Can't believe in God, Wally. I can't say that third step prayer.
Why is that, Tom? I had 4 years of theology.
I don't believe in God, Wally.
Oh, is that? That's all right. Say the prayer anyway, Tom. God don't care what you believe.
Okay, Wally. Well, Wally, it don't seem right, though. I mean, you tell me to pray to a God I don't believe in, you know, and you tell me I got to get honest in it.
Oh, you have a little dilemma.
Yeah, Wally. I got a little, what's that word?
Dilemma.
Dilemma, everybody. I got a little dilemma.
How long did you drink, Tom?
Oh, 27 years, Wally. It's a little late to worry about integrity. Say the damn prayer.
I'm sober 2 weeks. I drank 27, did everything in the book, went down and did it again to make sure I didn't miss none. And then I'm telling him, yeah, right. He didn't buy that, so I did that. I'm here to report to you that God acts in my life very fast, extremely fast. I was ready. Boy, if I was one of them turkeys they got them yellow poppers in, man, I was popped when I got here. This turkey was done. You could have sliced me with a butter knife. This turkey was done. I work with some guys, and when he ain't done, I shove him back in the oven. I mean, You can't slice no frozen turkey. The only thing you're going to do is ruin a perfectly good knife, and I ain't going to do that. You know? What happened to Jack? He wasn't done yet. We put him back here. Yeah, we're watching him. Yeah, pull him back. He's done. He starts thinking again. He's done. What happens? Here's a good one for emotional sobriety. You're very immature, Tom. Well, Wally, I'm 48 years old. I didn't ask your age. I'm not the census taker. He said, you're immature. And I told Wally all the stuff I did. I've been halfway around the world. I ran some successful businesses. My father died when I was young. I know that I finished college. I worked at night and I put about four of my brothers through college and one of my sisters. I got a sister who's been a nun 47 years. We did all kinds of crap. My sister describes our family. A lot of people, they wrestle with that word dysfunctional, isn't it? Yeah. What did she say that we were? Pat was at a retreat, my sister, okay? We were chaotically creative. Is that what she said? Something like that? Yeah. Yeah, we had creative chaos in the house I came from. She said, anyway. She's a psychologist and a psychiatrist, and she taught in McGill's up in Montreal and all them fancy places. She did comparative religious, Benares in India for a couple years, and she and DeMello were good friends. Anyway, all that good stuff. We're just chaotically creative. Anyway. He says, you're immature. I told him all the stuff I did. And after I got finished telling him all that stuff, he says to me, you're immature. I said, immature is a lack of experience, Wally. He says, you lack experience. I just told you all my experience. He said, you don't have any experience.
What do you mean you don't have any experience?
He said, you had happenings. Oh, crap. I suspected in my guts he was right, but I didn't know the difference. I said, what's the difference? He said, you had happenings. Now, when you get down in your meditation and do your inventory and share with me, you'll find this out. What you'll find out is this. You will get honest with yourself and you'll ask yourself the quality, surgical, incisive questions. Tom, what really happened? Not what did you lie to yourself about that habit? Tom, what part did you play in what happened? Excusing all others. Ooh. Tom, don't tell me what you wished had happened. Tom, don't tell me what you intended happened. What really happened? What part did you play in it? Excusing all others. Now, that will convert your happenings into experience. And as soon as you do that, you can deposit that experience in your spiritual bank and draw from that spiritual account to help others. And that's the real purpose of steps 4 and 5, to convert your happenings to experience, not to punish you and not confessional in nature. It is to discover the truth about ourselves and to get value from our truth in total belief that in God's economy, absolutely nothing is wasted. That's what it's all about. For me, that's what 4 and 5 is about, to prepare ourselves. I read 25 books on self-help, and so have you. I read one book on helping others and got sober. I finally gained it. That's what I did. One book. Followed directions. Sober. I was working on myself. Did you like that one? I'm working on my character defects. I wanted to impress Wally. I was going to get a bandana, a sweatband. You know what I mean? Put it like I was working real hard. What is this with sweatbands with these guys? Most of the guys in Baltimore that come to meetings with sweatbands, so on, they're unemployed. What, they gonna sweat? Well, what's with this all about, you know? Maybe one of you guys could tell me. They gonna sweat, you know? I was gonna work on myself. Wally says, what step are you using, Tom?
6, Wally.
He says, that's good. It's the right step. Wally wears a hearing aid. When I talk too long, he shuts it off. We're sensitive people. We know such things, you know. And so I says, I'm using step 6. That's good. He said, what'd you say? I'm entirely ready to have God remove my defects of character. He says, who? I says, God. He said, well, what do you got your fingers in there for? Don't you realize a sick mind cannot fix a sick mind? You ask God to remove these defects of character. Oh, okay, Wally. I don't have to work on myself. He says, you're not qualified. What am I qualified to do? Ask God. You're qualified to do that. He says, now you go and do 7. What's 7 about? He says it's about the same as 4 and 5. It tells you right at the conclusion. It's a little less subtle. It tells you to prepare me to carry this message to other alcoholics. That's the real purpose of this whole thing. The real purpose. It's not to become good. If you want to become good, join a church. They're great at getting you good. They will get you as good as you can stand. Maybe a little better than you can stand. Then you'll take up drinking, and we can really help you. It's that simple. Get as good as you can stand. You got to let go of your old ideas, absolutely. It don't say you have to let go of your bad ideas. Listen very carefully. I didn't do nothing there. I'm still on some alcoholic thinking. See? Let go of your old ideas, absolutely. That's dying to self, isn't it? Of course it is. Paul says it. It's the wisdom of the ages. Augustine said it before Paul. Christ said it before them. It's not new. It's the wisdom of the ages. That's all. We're not a clique. We're people who found recovery in the spiritual power of the ages. That's all. We know how to apply it here. Let go of your old. Ever play lawyer with your sponsor? Whoo, dangerous game. Very, very dangerous. Let go of your old ideas, absolutely. Wow. Okay, Wally, let's say I got 1,000 ideas. And let's say 999 is bad ideas. I understand. I got to let go of them. But suppose just by luck or the law of averages, I got one good idea. Just one. Do I have to let go of that? And while he talks to me like I got a different copy of the big book of him, he says, what does your book say? I says, my book says, absolutely. He says, you're a big college man. What does absolutely mean? I says, all of them. He says, you got that. Aren't you glad you went to school now? But I was puzzled. I got one good idea, and our book says I got to let go of it. I'm sitting there, and while it gets 15 seconds go by, and then he tells me the truth. He says, if that one idea is good, God will send it back. Why all the fuss? Then he says to me, that keeps you from trying to separate the good from the bad, for our literature will tell us. At this point of your recovery, you do not know the truth from the false, and you cannot separate the good from the bad. God will do the separating for you and send back to you the good idea. Boom. He hits hard, gentle, but real hard. And I remember, this is how we get emotional stability. Do you know what emotional stability is? It's not trying to get perfect. Irene touched on it. And then he goes, I'll do this when? If this is finished, if that is finished, if the other thing is bull crap. That's laziness. The conditions are not right.
They never will be right.
The conditions are now. What I really believe emotional sobriety really is the ability to continue on with life with unresolved situations. They ain't resolved now, but go. Go now and go as you are. We will get to the final key of what underpins all this so-called highfalutin thinking. We will get to the end of what supports it all. So just float a while with me. The atmosphere may do you good. Now we get to Ted. That tells us, oh, I'm a little bit confused or this or that and the other thing. In other words, less than perfect. And it's all right. If you're angry, the fault is yours.
How do you feel?
What is your feeling? I have to examine what my feeling is. You know what my feeling is on anything. Everybody thinks about feelings as something to be dealt with. Bullshit. Isn't that love a feeling? Love is not to be dealt with. Love is to be experienced. Isn't that hope a reaction to a belief that there may be an answer somewhere for you for something that looked insoluble? Of course it is. Sure. What are my feelings? My feelings are my response to what I think happened. And I'm not so sure I always know exactly what happened. For I think that we see from where we are. We do not see from where it is. And I think we hear from where we are. We do not hear what is said. Now, if you doubt that, it's a very simple test. You know from your own experience, someone that you do not like can tell you to go to hell and you'll slap them. The next person to come along that you like can tell you to go to hell and you'll run home and pack. No, it's not what it said. It's how where you see from where you are. So if you're in good spiritual ground, you will see the spiritual nature of the universe. But when I'm in self-centered ground, I will always see how it affects me and my selfish interest. So when they say, well, we have some anger, resentments, the problem is always within us. Doesn't mean it's going to stay there. It means that we can identify it is a problem. Here's a good one.
I am having a bad day.
Isn't that something? Having a bad day. Now let me ask you just about me. I told you a little about me. You know that I belong dead, and I know that I belong dead, and the American mortality table, the American insurance companies would say in late 1967, this dude should be dead. So we're in full agreement. I should be dead. Obviously, I'm not. So, what's this all about? You know, but why should you? You know, well, it's the way I lived. See? Now, I am on borrowed time. Okay, I should be dead. That's pretty obvious. So today is a borrowed day for me. How can it be a bad day? How can it be? I belong dead. Hell, I still drive past the cemetery and feel like a no-show. I ain't dead. I belong dead. God started the day off as a wonderful creation. As an outward expression of his inner love for you all on this planet. That's how he started off. And he invited every one of us to participate in this day in love with God. We are all been invited equally. Some of us get the busies.
I got to do this. They got a sale on tires down at Sears.
And do you know, they got flea powder for so-and-so in Seattle. That's impressive as hell, ain't it? You're having a bad day because of flea powder. The only reason Tom ever had a bad day is because people weren't doing things my way. I would call that a bad day, and I tell you how I know it. I'm driving down the highway myself. Oh, and I was sober for about 5 years, and I'd done the steps, and I was sponsoring people, doing all the things. You know, I was praying every day, and I was joyous, and I thought I was doing it wrong, because all these guys were in there bitching. It's hard, and it didn't seem hard at all. Well, I was doing out there, sleeping under that bridge in the cold weather and panhandling for money, a guy with my kind of pride. That was hard. That was hard. Knowing that tomorrow was going to be a gray something, I don't know, dawn or dusk, and it was going to be the same and boring and hopeless. That's hard. Not knowing how to live and not knowing how to die, no place else to go, that's hard. Driving down the road, saying to myself, this is, must be the bad day they're talking about. I'm in the car, going to wait on me. Tom, is it a bad day all over the world or just in this car that you can swear to? That I can swear to just in this car. Oh. Who's in this car besides you, Tom? No one. So it's just a bad day with you in this car. Is that right, Tom? Yeah. Why is it a bad day with you just in this car, Tom? Well, I told George at 8:30 this morning to do so-and-so. Are you George's boss? Yes. Did you tell him politely? I didn't overdo the politeness, no. Answer the question. No, not politely. All right. John, I told him to do something. Did he do it? Yeah, but he did it in the afternoon. And you're having a bad day because they didn't do it when you thought they should do it. Yeah, basically that's it. All right, so it's not a bad day. It's just a day when John and Steve delayed doing what you told him to do, but he did it. Yeah, that's right. So your bad day's up in between your ears, your head, ain't it? Yeah, if you want to put it that way, yeah, I want to put it that way. Yeah, right, okay. I want to have a bad day. People weren't doing things my way. Don't they know I have a better idea? Do you ever tell this lie to yourself? I just want it for her own good. Like, she don't know what's good for her, right? But I do. Bull. Bull. When I say for your own good, I mean my way. I just lie that way. I know none of you are that devious, but I am. Ever since then, I've been having good days. It's amazing. The same things are happening, but I've been having good days. How about that? You think that might be emotional sobriety as a result of the steps, as they tell us in the book? We get spiritual sobriety. We get spiritually well first. Our book is filled with that. It is filled with it. Get sober, but you can't stay sober if you're an alcoholic of my type without recovery. I've got to be in recovery. I've got to have a spiritual awakening. I have to have a God consciousness or a higher power consciousness. I use God, too, for three reasons. One, it's short. Two, it's easy to remember. And three, it's not difficult to spell. That's God, you know, okay. That's my theology lesson. Wally, this is it. That's what you got to say. That's what we do. And that guy said to me, I can't meditate. I tried it. You watch too much TV. I think Jenny was talking about that. Yeah. Can't meditate. I can't meditate. You watch too much TV too, Jenny. You ain't no different than me. So Wally says, the Zen truck driver, I call him now. Not in front of his face, but that's what I call him in front of you. Don't rat me out, none of you guys or girls. While he's a neat guy, sober, he puts a hell of a... He's 84. He just went to Costa Rica for his church to do some missionary work. Right, 84. And I get some bums, 35, can't get to a meeting. No wonder I kick them, you know. I don't kick hard, but I still kick them. You know. 35. Get out of the way, bum. Make room for somebody who wants this thing. Get out of the way. You're in the way. You're part of the problem. You know? You're slowing this thing down. Get out of the way. When you're ready, we'll be here. But in the meantime, get out of the way. Sure, I'm not very popular, but that we don't get recovery by votes. We get it by the grace of God, and being willing to accept grace of God on God's terms, which are love and service. That's the only two terms that God has. Love and service. Wow. Now, service is not folding envelopes in your intergroup office and sending out flyers for fundraisers. Oh, I'm in service. I fold these fundraisers. Walmart does that. That's administration. We have one service in Alcoholics Anonymous. One. There are many things we do to support that one service, but there's nothing that's a substitute for that one service. And that one service is one alcoholic talking with, not to, with another alcoholic, for the sole purpose of lowering his sense of difference at least enough to take some steps he or she does not yet believe in. That is our service. That's what we do. That is the reason I am in recovery. That is what gives my life power, direction, and an everlasting purpose. Power, direction, and purpose. I may often be wrong, but I always know where I'm going. See, I don't mind getting going. Even sometimes I say to God, I got to go over there, God, and I got to tell me to help another guy. Tell me what to say. I'll tell you when you get there, Tom. Can't you tell me now, God? No, you'll screw it up between here and there. Oh. And then I say, there's real words of spiritual awareness. Okay, God. Okay, God. That's what I do. Thank you, Patty. That's what we do. Meditate. How do you meditate? The Zen truck driver knows. It's like the shadow he knows. Wally, I can't meditate. I tried the lotus position. Like, that's how I know about you, Watson. I did the same damn thing. That's how I know about it. And I threw my hip out. I'm going to meditate like I'm some kind of swami or some crap, you know. Well, I said, no.
Wally, I can't meditate.
He says, yes, you can.
Oh, Wally, I tried. I can't meditate. My hip still hurts and I got a limp. He said, that don't look spiritual to me.
He says, did you ever see a girl that you liked?
Oh, sure, Wally. I see plenty of girls I like. There's a lot of nice girls around.
Yeah, it's good. Did you ever see one you liked and you thought about her most of the day?
Oh, yeah, Wally. I see girls like that, yeah.
He says, that's meditating. Now we're going to show you how to change the subject. But you know how to meditate. He proved to me I could meditate, but I denied it. And then he told me, we'll show you how to change the subject. We'll change the subject from her to God. Change the subject from what you wish he could do with you to what you know God can do with you. Are you an alcoholic, Tom?
Yeah, Wally, you know that.
Have you drank today?
No, Wally.
Has it anything to do with you?
I'm just willing, but everything else is God.
All right. Did you throw up this morning like you used to?
No, Wally.
Mm-hmm. Do you have many bad days anymore?
No, Wally, not since I found out it was all my will.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. You got some guys that you help?
Yeah, Wally, I do that.
Mm-hmm. Meditate on that. Oh. That's what you mean. Meditate on the effects of the grace of God in your life every day. How do you start? Like this. Oxygen in. Carbon dioxide out. Thank God. Everything's working. That's basic meditation. If you ain't breathing, it's a little hard to meditate. So I would start with the basics. And you go from there. That's what we do. See? I'm going to close with this. It's only my personal opinion. And I've been known to be wrong more often than right. But I have an opinion. And if I need right in my life, I turn always to God, never to myself. If I need a sense of humor in my life, I look in the mirror, and I can always smile. See? If you want to be happy, you have to take one big risk, and you can get something in your life that will outstrip happiness. Most of us have been in pursuit of happiness all of our lives. I have never caught happiness despite all the pursuit in all the years. What are you talking about, Tom? You can pursue something else. Pursue joy. Stop pursuing happiness. Happiness is always conditional. I will be happy if I have this job. And you got the job, and you were happy for a while. It's a condition, is it not? I would be happy if I have this guy or this girl. And you got that guy or that girl. I will be happy if I get rid of this guy or this girl. And we've all had that. Okay. So the pursuit of happiness ain't really what it's cracked up to be, because it's conditional. Pursue something unconditional. Pursue joy, and it's extremely simple. Get a sponsor and have a spiritual awakening. Express your gratitude to a guy of your understanding, and help another human being. And as you do that, you first feel uncomfortable. And as you pursue that and repeat the process, you feel more and more comfortable. See? And as you feel comfortable, this idea of working with others becomes fun. I have a lot of fun. You know, like a guy's as goofy as me. That sounds it's a little bit excessive, but it's true. There's some out there actually as goofy as me. See? And that's fun. That's absolutely fun. And then you do it for free. You do it for free. And when you do that, God pats you on the heart. Mankind can pat you on the back, but God will pat you on the heart. It's an inside job. You're having fun. God is patting you on the heart. You have purpose, power, and direction for your life. These things happen to you. And then you get this thing called joy, which is God-given. See, it's not conditional. Now, it doesn't make your life all crap, you know, uneventful. That's the best way I can say it. Events will happen in your life. But what joy does is this. It doesn't leave. I could have periods of sorrow in my life, and joy will shorten the period of sorrow. And joy will take the sharp edges off of pain, and it doesn't last too long. And joy will light you up in such a way you don't even know. But others can find their way along this dark path looking for a loving God, looking for health and sobriety. And you will light their way for them. You will be the light of God in a human form, here and now, and you're 100% prepared now. So I beg you, abandon the pursuit of happiness. Pursue joy instead. It's more than a trip. It's been an adventure in living. Free. To good purpose. I just feel wonderful, but inside and outside. And it's all a gift from God. And God has no favorites. The only requirement is you go to God and ask Him, That's all. There's no other requirement. You ask God. You are His child. God loves you. Which of you who has their child come to you and ask for certain things that would improve that child, that you would withhold it? And which of you think that you're a better parent than God? You see? Which? I just want to touch on one thing with Jenny. I had a brother who went blind. It's an accident. And he was the first student that ever graduated from Loyola College stone blind. And he was a teacher at Archbishop Curley High School in Baltimore for 30-some years. He died recently. He's 72. He's younger than me. I'm older than him. Okay. 72. And the write-ups in the major newspapers in the area were mostly from reporters who knew him and some of the outstanding things this blind teacher did. And he kept a low profile. And there were like presidents of corporations he had taught, wrote from Milwaukee and Chicago and places like that. Tell your boy about my brother and I'll send you the write-ups about him. In God's economy, absolutely nothing is wasted. Let's love one another, for love breeds love and sows love. And in the midst of love, you will find God, the author of love. Thank you.